You are listening to Sparking Wholeness with Erin Carey, where we talk about all things related to nutrition for mind, body, and soul. Are you ready? Let's do this. Hey, everybody, it's Erin Carey. Welcome back to Sparking Wholeness. Today, I am sitting down with Dr. Anjali Agrawal. She is a family chiropractor, functional nutritionist, founder, and speaker. Her practice emphasizes a holistic approach that is non-cracking and non-popping. I love that. Dr. Anjali helps families navigate their journey from conception to adulthood. As the founder of Back in Balance, she integrates gentle chiropractic adjustments, functional nutrition, ergonomics, and a variety of unique diagnostic testing to identify the root cause of symptoms. She is passionate about helping strengthen the nervous systems of babies even before birth. Dr. Anjali's expertise has been featured in a variety of national media outlets, including Newsweek, HuffPost, The Daily Flash, Media Magazine, and so much more. Thank you. Welcome for being on the welcome to the show, I should say. And thank you for being a part.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Thanks too. Yeah. So let's talk about the importance of digestion and how that even impacts our mental health and neurotransmitters and having things in balance with our nervous system. How important is digestion? Maybe I'll start there.
Yeah, I think, you know, digestion is such an interesting topic because I think it's one of the main taboo topics that no one talks about, right? Yeah. Like politics and religion are also up there, but you can find groups to talk about politics and religion, but nobody talks about digestion. Like my mom still gets upset with me when I talk about bowel movements at the dining table, right? And so and it gets written off as whatever your body is doing is considered normal for your body. And so unless you're in intense pain or having severe symptoms, most of the time people just accept whatever is happening as normal, quote unquote normal. And that's just how we live our life. And so when our children then start to experience digestive symptoms, because we've gone through the same thing, we then accept it as being part of day-to-day life. So one of the main things that I focus on for my practice members is really looking at what digestion looks like. Because if we can't absorb the nutrients from the foods that we're eating, then it almost doesn't really matter if you're doing gluten-free or paleo or Mediterranean or whatever you're prescribing to. Not to say that there isn't value there, but if we can't break down the nutrients and eliminate waste appropriately, then our body's just kind of slugging along, right? It's really hard to keep up. And so that's why digestion is such a passionate topic of mine, and really helping people understand that, you know, it's great if you have at least one bowel movement a day. So the technical definition of constipation is at least one bowel movement a day, or less than one bowel movement a day would be considered being constipated. And I talk about this all the time. So poop is kind of day-to-day lingo for me, but but really, if you think about when we eat a meal, we should absorb some nutrients from it, but there should also be some waste that gets eliminated from it. So ideally speaking, you would actually have a bowel movement for every meal that you eat, which is kind of mind-blowing for many people, because so many people are used to a bowel movement every day, every other day, one to two times, or once every day to 2 days. It kind of varies. Sometimes it's more than that. And they've gotten used to that. So to think of having a daily bowel movement or two bowel movements a day, three bowel movements a day feels kind of out there. But that's what I really emphasize, especially for my pediatric practice members, because if we can start shifting their gut function at an earlier age, we just set the stage to be much more optimal going forward. And you asked about the connection with mental health. And, you know, there's a lot of research that talks about the gut-brain connection, the brain, the gut being like the second brain. And because about 95% of neurotransmitters, especially serotonin, is produced in the gut, not in the brain, if we don't have good gut health, then it's hard to produce the adequate levels of serotonin, which then later converts to melatonin, which allows us to sleep well. And so it's just all connected. And so it's hard to break down the individual components of it, because I think a lot of times we just lose sight of the fundamental aspects of what it means to make good food choices, but then what does it look like when we actually digest that food appropriately?
For sure. And, you know, I know a lot of people are asking the question, what do I eat? What do I eat? But maybe it sounds like what you're saying, a more appropriate question would be, how do I eat so that I know that I'm absorbing?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the old adage is that you are what you eat. And I think there is truth to that, but I think it's actually more accurate to say that you are what you absorb and digest, because our, and the other part to that is that we actually crave and avoid what we can't digest. And that's an interesting topic to go over with my practice members, and because we don't think about it that way, right? We're not used to thinking about, I work with a lot of pregnant women, and so it has become very common and therefore accepted if a woman during her pregnancy is having food cravings or food aversions, and we kind of expect that to happen. And but that can happen outside of pregnancy also, right? So many people will start having aversions to, let's say, meat or eggs or something like that. And many women have trouble breaking down protein and fat.
Yeah.
And so it starts becoming this natural response, because we just don't feel good when we eat that food. And so then we start avoiding it. But on the flip side, I dealt with sugar cravings for much of my life. And I was kind of surprised when I got into functional medicine and found out the link between craving sugar and not being able to break down carbohydrates. And it's because we continuously are eating it because we're craving it, but because our body isn't getting the appropriate support to break down those nutrients, it's having to work really hard. And so then the body's kind of on a backlog of digesting food that we've eaten in previous meals. And so therefore, it doesn't even really recognize that we've eaten that food. So when we crave sugar, we're craving complex carbohydrates actually, but our brain has converted that to mean the refined carbohydrates or the sugar. And so then our body will seek it out. And so you can use willpower for a period of time, but if your body is actually needing the carbohydrates, it will seek it out, and then you will crave it, even if you have all the willpower and knowledge in the world to say, I know this isn't a great choice, but I still can't stop myself from eating this bag of cookies or eating all the bread.
Yeah. I mean, and I hear a lot of people say lately, the new one I hear about is Cheez-Its. People are craving Cheez-Its.
Yes.
Which is sugar too, right? Refined carb. So you're saying that people who crave sugar or carbs, things like that, it could be the fact that their body can't break it down appropriately.
Right. So I work with a lot of people in terms of just, again, getting down to the fundamentals. Like, are you taking time to eat your food? Like, do you chew your food? Ideally 32 times until it becomes liquid in your mouth. Are you in a relaxed state of mind when you're eating your food? Because if you're stressed at work, if you're watching the news, news is hardly ever good news. And so even if you don't feel like you're getting stressed, that is putting your body on an alert state of being, right? So if you're eating on the go, if you're, and it really, if you can just carve out 10 to 15 minutes to sit down and maybe have some relaxing music or have a nice conversation with somebody, but ideally allowing your body to get into a place of slowing down so that you can actually digest your food. Because if we're in a state of fight or flight, or if we encounter a bear, our body's not going to be thinking about, let me digest my food appropriately. And we were designed to have episodic stress, right? And stress can be mental, emotional stress. It can be structural, functional stress, physical stress. It can be nutritional, chemical stress, and it can be any combination of that. But if we're in So for most people in this day and age, we're under stress in some capacity almost 24/7. And so our bodies are in that fight, flight, or freeze mode much of the time. And if we add to that by trying to eat our food really quickly or not taking the time to chew our food or digest the food, then it's really challenging to actually absorb the nutrients from what we're trying to do.
So this is why a lot of people can have like bloating, indigestion, reflux, things like that after a meal, if they're not taking that time.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think that's something a lot of people have never heard before. And that's something that they're not familiar with. I mean, when you mentioned chewing things till it's liquid, that might gross somebody out.
Yeah.
A lot of our fast processed foods have been designed not to be chewed that much. Like you just kind of inhale it. So then we're up against that, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's become how life is, right? If you're a mom with little kids, you may not get time to actually sit down and eat your meal in peace and quiet. And so you might have someone tugging on your pant leg and someone crying for something. And, or if you're in a meeting or, you know, you have meetings back to back or whatever the situation might be, it has become very common that we have a couple minutes to eat our food and we have to get it all down and just go on to the next thing. But that's just really hard to actually assimilate all the nutrients. So I kind of give the example of when we go to a nice restaurant, you know, there's dim lighting, soft music. It takes about an hour, hour and a half from start to finish for the meal versus the fast food experience where there's usually loud music, bright colors, and you're in and out in, you know, 10, 15 minutes. So if you can try to emulate that relaxed atmosphere more frequently, it just makes for a better process for your body.
Yeah, it's so interesting that you bring this up. My husband actually sent me a reel the other day on Instagram. I don't even remember who the account was from or the creator or whatever, but basically it was talking about this person. They started eating family dinner with their kids by candlelight. And it was such a calming, like they did it just kind of for fun one night and they realized the kids were calmer. Dinner was like just more enjoyable. And I guess like what you're saying, it just kind of put the body in a better place to digest. And I think that's so important because, you know, we talk about what we eat, but not necessarily how we eat.
Yeah.
And even with that, I think it's a really good place to pause and thank our sponsor for today's episode because we're talking about nutrition and we're talking about nutrients. And this episode is sponsored by Thorne. Thorne is one of my favorite companies to get high quality supplements. I am always trying to find the best options out there. As a health coach, as an applied functional medicine practitioner, this is really, really important to me. Thorne takes a personalized, innovative, and scientific approach to health and wellness with their supplements. They manufacture all their supplements in the U.S. using top-notch ingredients sourced globally. Plus, they team up with leading medical professionals to bring you highly effective nutritional supplements. So I'm talking about a B complex, and that's my favorite. I'm going to tell you more about that in a minute. Creatine, magnesium, or basic prenatal. Their prenatal vitamin is incredible. Thorne's got all the supplements that I need to help promote and maintain my health goals. And I am always promoting these supplements with my clients as well. Personally, I love the basic B complex. It is one of my favorite, hands down, favorite products from Thorne. B vitamins are so important for fueling our cellular metabolism, and it can help really support cellular energy. And so I enjoy the quality of the ingredients. And the Thorne Basic B Complex contains B vitamins in a form that I find to be the best for supporting my unique body. I also really love the powdered magnesium bisglycinate, which can be super helpful for a sleepy girl mocktail at the end of the night. It can help support a better night's rest, a more restful feeling, and I am a big fan of that. With Thorne, I never have to question what's in each supplement because they really, truly go the extra mile when it comes to quality, manufacturing, and like I said, ingredients. They go through such thorough testing, and they have a super clean manufacturing process. They have earned some of the highest certifications in the industry. Thorne is not just my go-to, it's trusted by over 5 million customers, 47,000 healthcare pros, loads of pro athletes, 100 plus pro sports teams, and multiple U.S. national teams. It is that good. Give your body what it really needs with Thorne. Go to thorn.fit/wholeness and use the code wholeness for 10% off your first order. That's thorne.fit/wholeness. Code wholeness for 10% off your first order. thorn.fit/wholeness, code wholeness. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. So, Dr. Anjali, if how we eat matters so much, what if someone is having a busy day, they're just kind of in a hurry, on the go? Is it better to just hurry and shovel all the food in, or to wait until they can slow down and enjoy it?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I mean, there's a lot a trending behind intermittent fasting and things like that. And I do think there, if you're on the go, and if this is just your general lifestyle, I would say if you're not able to pause and wait until you can slow down a little bit to take 10 to 15 minutes to actually just chew your food and eat your food, I would say try to do things like smoothies or things that maybe don't require so much chewing, so that you can actually assimilate the nutrients a little bit more quickly, especially for breakfast, right? Because your body has been fasting overnight, most likely. And so when you first get up, if you immediately jump into eating a lot of food on a completely empty stomach, it can be a little bit of work. But one of the things I like to tell people is that, you know, there's ideal and there's reality. We're trying to make reality more ideal. And so we can get really caught up in all the, oh, what would be the ideal scenario for things? But I think for most people, that can be too big of a jump to try to make a part of their daily habits. And so then therefore they just kind of give up on the whole thing and then just continue what they've been doing. So having something liquid, like having a protein shake, or you know, paying attention to the quality of the protein that mm-hmm. you're having and what you're putting in there. But having some kind of smoothie can be a nice way to hold you over. But yeah, ideally having the time to sit down and actually chew your food and absorb your nutrients while being in a as relaxed state of a mind as possible would be the goal.
Yeah, no, I think that's really helpful for people to hear, because there's also a lot of back and forth on, you know, smoothies. Is that okay for digestion? Is that not okay because you're not chewing? But I do think that in a pinch, things like that can be helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, depending on everyone's body, it can be different. If you are really sensitive to blood sugar levels dropping, it may not be a good idea to wait an additional hour or two until you can slow down and get a break. But maybe it means if you have control over your schedule to some degree, blocking out 15 minutes to eat something while you're sitting. And so, again, to try to get back to the fundamentals, what I encourage people to do when they're thinking about what they're eating, rather than getting really caught up in, you know, do I have X grams of protein or X grams of carbohydrates? If you can first identify the three macronutrients on your plate, whether you're eating a meal or a snack, if you have ideally a complex carbohydrate like a vegetable rather than a fruit, and some kind of protein and some kind of fat, right? If you have all three of those components, you at least have your basics covered, and then everything else is kind of additional. But if it's let's say you're having some nuts as a snack, then you're missing the carbohydrate component of it, right? So if you can just try to get to the basics of having a ideally complex carbohydrate, a protein and a fat every time you eat, then you're kind of covered with that.
Yeah. And by complex carb, a lot of people would think whole grain, but complex carb can be fruit or vegetable, correct?
It's actually more the fruit and vegetable, because the refined carb is more the whole grain. It just depends on how refined it is, right? So if it's the whole kernel versus if it's gone through a process of getting more processed, but yeah, the complex carb would actually be more the vegetable and or fruit.
Yeah. So by having, say, some kind of protein. Let me give an example. What did I have for dinner yesterday? Oh, I had eggs. That's a really bad example. Last night, I didn't know what I was going to make. So I had eggs and avocado, and I think I had some salsa on there. So that would be my vegetables. It was just kind of a
The
throw together.
avocado serves
That
as
works for
the
fruit and veggie.
carbohydrate and the fat.
Oh yeah.
And
Right. And the
depending
fiber.
on, yes, and depending on how you cook the egg, right? If you put it in some oil or some butter, you got the fat that way also. You got the protein with the eggs, and you got your some vegetables and fruit with your salsa. So that's great. You got it all covered.
So that could be helpful just to simplify it for listeners, because I think sometimes when we talk about a balanced plate, even what you're saying, it's like, oh no, now I have like, do I have everything? But it really could be something as simple as eggs and avocado. Or even just like veggie and protein. And it doesn't have to be something that we overthink about. I think people get really caught up with that.
For sure. So like, even if we're talking about the smoothie again, like maybe you add some cauliflower rice, maybe you add some spinach or some avocados or some nuts to make it, and maybe some fruit, or so you can get it to be a more complete, as opposed to maybe just doing a fruit and some kind of milk or milk alternative and calling that your smoothie, right? So so there are easy ways. I think cauliflower rice is a really easy way to get some veggies in without sacrificing as much on the taste side. It doesn't have to get super complicated. So even if you're talking about, if you're having pasta, do you have some protein in there? Do you have some fat in there? Do you have some veggies or carbohydrate, complex carbs along with your pasta? So at least it's a little bit more complete.
Yeah. No, I love that you mentioned, I got to say, I have not heard anybody else mention the cauliflower rice in a smoothie. And that is like my go-to. I love that. Oh. I tell people about this all the time because people, when people think smoothies, they just think lots and lots of fruit, which it doesn't have to be. And I'm like, gosh, I want to get my veggies in. And if that's a quick and easy way to get my veggies. And if you do the frozen rice cauliflower, you don't even know it's there. It blends. It's like ice. And there's your another really great cruciferous veggie boost for the day. So oh, I'm so glad that you mentioned that. Yeah, that's fun. And even for kids, like I think there's so many ways that we can do this with our kids. And maybe you could talk a little bit about kids' nutrition and how to help our kids understand the importance of this. Because most of our kids, depending on where they go to school and how much time they have for lunchtime, or even in the morning getting ready for school, I watched my boys this morning just shoveling in, as quick as they could.
Yeah.
And I think it's like thinking about pasta. I usually try to do chickpea pasta for my kids because I do try to keep things gluten-free for a whole myriad of reasons. But chickpea pasta offers that fiber, a little bit more protein. And then we usually have like a grass-fed butter or something and another protein to go with that and some kind of veggies, depending on what they're in the mood for, what they like. But what are some other options to help make sure that kids are getting more balanced nutrition?
Sure. I mean, it's really easy to like blend it into marinara sauce or something that, right? So getting a little bit creative. And, actually it's interesting in all these years of working with families, many times the kids are actually really receptive to eating healthier foods. It's actually usually the parents who have a harder time wrapping their head around newer recipes or, getting a little creative. And so, so the kids' taste buds actually start shifting pretty quickly when they're starting to eat healthier. And they actually tend to enjoy it a lot more quickly and a lot more easily than most parents anticipate that they would. So a lot of times it's just that we haven't really been exposed to different types of fruits and vegetables, because as a general statement, I'd say that we tend to eat about the same 10 to 14 foods on a fairly consistent basis, right? We just figure out what we like, and then that kind of becomes our rinse and repeat go-tos, which is great. However, then I think we sometimes miss other opportunities and options that we might consider. So I think, ideally, if you have a farmer's market close by and getting to explore what seasonal items are, that can be a great way to introduce kids to it, as well as parents or adults. But Oftentimes it just gets it's just a matter of getting a little bit creative. So if my kids are having pancakes, I'll add some protein powder, I'll add some hemp seeds to the pancakes, right? And so it doesn't really change the taste of what they're eating, but they're getting a little bit more comprehensive nutrition. excuse me. If we're again like the pasta, I'll just blend things into the marinara sauce and do it that way. Or some kids don't necessarily like spinach in and of itself, but if you feed them green rice, if you call it something else, then they will actually enjoy the taste of it because it doesn't taste like spinach or look like spinach. And so that tends to work well for some families. I often have kids. I work with some really high quality supplement companies, and so then I'll use the protein powder to make energy bites for kids, right? Especially if they're in between activities, they don't necessarily have time to eat, but rather than grabbing a bag of chips or some cookies, then I'll make the energy bites, and it's just, protein powder, some honey, and some nut butter or nut butter alternative. So it gives them the quick energy that they need, along with the protein to kind of sustain what their body needs are for the different activities. So that's kind of some of my go-tos for that population.
Yeah, no, I think that's super helpful. And what, how can you or can you speak to the idea that, I mean, what is the statistic now? I think it's over 68% of people are consuming ultra processed foods. And how does that impact the way that we digest and use nutrients? Can we get nutrients from ultra processed foods? What if we're sitting down and chewing 32 times and taking our time or eating by candlelight? Tell me, let's talk about that.
Yeah, I actually just posted about this a few weeks ago, but I'm actually not sure of the answer to this question, which is why I posted it. Like the and the question was, is it better to eat, let's say, a prepackaged muffin on the go versus not eat, right? Like because something that is prepackaged, what are the chances of actually getting nutrients from it, right? Because it's if you baked this muffin, then you've destroyed some of the enzymes that are in this product. Let's say there's blueberries or something in there, but then the sugar content is higher. And so, is there actually benefit to eating something like that? And not to pass judgment in any capacity, because I've certainly done it myself, and my kids have done it. So it's not to say that it doesn't happen, but if there is benefit, I'm not actually sure that there is. So, going back to your earlier question, I think it would actually then be better to wait until you can have something. And when we're shopping, ideally, if you can shop in the perimeter of the store, right? Because that's where the foods are less processed and probably not processed really in much capacity at all, because that's where the produce is, that's where the refrigerated items are, right? But as soon as you start getting to the aisles, then that's where it's more higher shelf life for the different things that are in there. So I would say if you can keep the bulk of it to the perimeter of the store, then regardless of how you're cooking, well, I can't say regardless of how you're cooking, but chances are much higher that you would get higher nutrients from that. And then trying to stick to low temp cooking or medium temp cooking so that you can preserve some of the enzyme components of these different foods.
Yeah, that's so helpful. It's so funny. This is probably 3 weeks ago. My oldest, she's 19, and she has been through, I mean, when she was little, she was raised on processed packaged things because I didn't know any different. And about 10 years ago, maybe a little bit longer than that, I went through a huge health overhaul. And then when my youngest, who's 7, had some health issues, went through even more of a health overhaul. And it's just been baby steps along the way. Well, she the other day she complained. She said, "We have an ingredient house. We don't have a snack house. I can't just grab a snack. I have to make something." And for me, that was like the biggest compliment that she could give me. I'm like, "You're right. You have to make something from real food." Now, I do keep organic corn tortilla chips. We're a Texan family. We do chips and salsa. And so I keep those, and I get that Lesser Evil brand of popcorn because it's just minimal ingredients as well. But that's about it. And my kids, you want something, we're going to have to cut an apple, wash some fruit, cut some veggies. That's just how it is.
Yeah.
And I feel good about that, but I realize that it's really hard for people to get to that place without taking some baby steps. So where would you say is a really good start if somebody wanted to do like a pantry makeover to improve digestion, to improve nutrients, so they make sure that their body is getting what it needs? What's a good starting place?
I mean, even it can be even as simple as buying, you know, pre-cut veggies or fruit, or buying the ready to go guac and salsa. Like, if you have options that are convenient and easy, then it may make it easier so that you don't feel like you have to prepare all this stuff, right? Sometimes chopping all the vegetables, washing the dishes afterwards, and all of that can really add to one's experience of preparing a healthy meal for their families. But if you have things that are easy to, you know, already chopped, ready to go, then it doesn't feel as daunting. And then also, I think there is some element of meal prep involved in trying to make healthier choices, right? Because obviously, if you're super hungry in that moment, it may be harder to think of, let me prepare something versus let me just grab something that's ready to eat in this moment in time. And of course, not having it in the house, not having it available to you. But I think also then that goes to the grocery shopping and meal planning to say that for my family, this is what will work, or with my schedule, this is what will work. Maybe that means you batch cook. Maybe that means that you dedicate certain days of the week to say, okay, I'm going to spend 10 minutes, 15 minutes just preparing this meal. And so I get my kids involved in the meal planning, right? Like, this is what I think breakfast, lunch, dinner is going to look like. What are your thoughts? And so when they're a part of it, it makes it a lot easier to just get the whole family on the same page and trying to avoid things that someone really doesn't like, right? Because there are foods that I don't really like. Yeah. And so if someone told me that that was my only choice, I may not want to eat it for that meal. And so, so just trying to be respectful of everyone's preferences, regardless of their age, and just trying to get them involved in the process as early as we can.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really helpful. And yeah, making things accessible. And the reality is, because a lot of people will say, well, aren't you restricting your kids from, you know, I'm like, they're going to get so much in the outside world. I mean, just at school and games, you know, basketball, soccer, and all, people bring snacks. And oftentimes I'm the mom that's like cringing as I watch them, like, don't get the red Gatorade, don't get the red Gatorade, but it's all there. And so if I can give them a nutrient dense foundation at home, that's doing better than I used to. Right. And so I think that's what we're all just like on our way on this journey. So I think those are some really great practical tips. Now, you mentioned in your bio, I wanted to touch on this, the whole idea of ergonomics and how you use that in your practice. Will you talk about that a little bit? Cause that might be a word that somebody heard in the bio going, wait, what is that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's been really interesting. So I've been, in the world of corporate ergonomics for the last 15 years. And what that typically entails is, you know, going on site and, or doing a virtual assessment of someone's workspace and seeing how they move. Right. And so we were really designed for movement. We were not actually designed for static positions, whether that means sitting or standing in for any long stretches of time. But again, our reality has become that many of us are in more static positions throughout the day. And what I look at is within that, how are you moving? So if you're sitting in front of a computer, how are you typing? How are you mousing? Because we weren't actually taught how to mouse ever, right? Some people may have learned typing back with typewriters, but nobody ever actually taught us how to mouse. And so we have developed habits over time just based out of what feels right. But it's been interesting to see as a chiropractor what that actually translates to when I go out on the field. Because when I ask people in my office, what is your setup like? And they're like, oh, it's good. I had an assessment done and it's fine. But then when I go to people's offices and see what's happening, or when I do the virtual assessment, then I see what they're actually doing. And so they may be hunched over the laptop, they may be on their phone, they may be using an external keyboard, but it might be pushed back and they're resting their hands on the desk. And all of these things, I think nobody ever makes the connection for people in terms of why this matters. And so I feel like that's the main thing that I bring to the table, is helping to draw the connection between what they're doing, why that's impacting their body, and what that looks like down the road. Because I've seen it from both ends of my practice, with seeing what's happening in the field, seeing what the impact is once they come into the office. And whether we're talking about, again, the three different types of stresses, whether that's physical structural stress, nutritional chemical stress, mental emotional stress, for the vast majority of people who are exhibiting symptoms, it's usually a result of a buildup of micro trauma, right? So it's the way we sit, stand, sleep, move, that will dictate typically how well our bodies can actually move. So it's not that you bent down to tie your shoe and you couldn't stand back up because of that one singular event, but it was all the behavioral patterns that led up to that. And then same with eating, right? It's not necessarily that you can't ever eat a piece of cake or indulge when you're at a party or go on vacation. I feel like you should be able to do that, but it depends on what you're doing the vast majority of the time that will impact how well or not so well your body will actually be able to digest and process that those nutrients. And then when it comes to mental, emotional health, typically we're dealing with some kind of stress at home or work or both. It just becomes these small thoughts that become prevailing thoughts, and then something will happen and it feels like our world just fell apart. And it's certainly possible that you could have singular events that would rock the boat and how your body is doing, but majority of the time it's these repetitive microtrauma, right? So that's what we're looking at trying to improve.
Yeah, that's interesting. And even, I mean, just, you can tell nutrition is my passion because I'm going back there again. But even what you said about the piece of cake, I truly believe that it's one thing to eat cake at a party, celebration, you're enjoying, you're relaxed, you're feeling good. And a whole other thing to eat a piece of cake because you're stressed and you're upset and you're overwhelmed. Right. It's more reactionary eating as opposed to celebratory eating. That makes a difference. So you would say the same applies to any of these other aspects of our lives.
Right. So it's not to say that you can't sit in front of the computer or watch a movie and like sit down on the couch and do that. But if your whole day has been spent sitting in a very hunched over position because your muscles are just tired and we didn't recognize it because it has become our norm, then we just start to feel like, well, this is just how life is, right? And so when you ask somebody how they're doing, we only feel about 10% of what's happening in our bodies. It's kind of like the tip of the iceberg. And so consciously, we actually don't know what's happening in the vast majority of the systems in our body. Like, we don't feel the oxygen converting to carbon dioxide as we breathe it in air and out. All right. So we don't feel the transfer of nutrients from one system to another, because that's just all happening below our conscious awareness. And so using pain or discomfort or those kinds of symptoms as our indicator for how our health is actually not so great of an indicator, because that's only just scratching the surface of what's actually happening. So I like to do really unique diagnostic testing to help people identify what the root cause of their symptoms are, so that we can actually start to create a stronger foundation for people and actually give targeted, customized solutions for each person.
And you do this, you work with people virtually, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So what would that look like, the diagnostic testing that you do?
I do a combination of testing. I use hair saliva testing from this company that I found about 6 years ago, and it has replaced all my other testing that I used to do. And I do offer functional medicine approach to or analysis to blood work testing. So if someone has had their blood work drawn, I'm happy to look at that from a functional medicine perspective, which is different than the clinical interpretation that people typically get from their practitioner. And then using the hair saliva, I do fingernail and tongue analysis and looking at how their reflexes correlate with the different parts of the body to identify what is happening for them, as well as what support, whether that means making changes to what we're eating and or adding some kind of supplement support to assist the body in healing the actual tissues, so we just get faster support and results.
Yeah. No, that's fascinating. And so you have, I know you've got, you're launching a course soon, and then you also have a free assessment quiz that you have offered to listeners, correct?
Yeah. And I'm happy to share that with everybody.
Okay, great. Do you have the link now, or do you want me to just include it in the show notes?
We can do it in the show notes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I thought we said before we started recording. I just want to make sure.
It's a little bit long, so it's just easier to.
Perfect. I will put that in the show notes so everybody can get that. Okay. And then my favorite question that I love to ask everybody, if you could give one piece of advice to spark someone toward wholeness, what would it be?
Slow down, I think. And just try to recognize the way that stress impacts our bodies in all kinds of ways, right? And again, stress can be in many forms. We typically think of stress as mental stress or emotional stress, and it can be these other large categories as well. And so I think if we can take a moment to pause and breathe, take a deep breath in, I think that makes a big difference for people.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, where can people follow you, find you, and then contact you for more information?
Yeah. So I'm on social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, getting on Pinterest, and I have a YouTube channel and my website. So there's
awesome.
Multiple avenues.
And I will be sure to link all of that in the show notes. Notes cannot talk today as well. But yes, excellent. This has been so helpful. And I know we targeted quite a bit of the nutrition things, but I think that is actionable and practical for people. But just the fact that the how matters so much. It's not so much the what, but the how. And so I really hope that listeners take that. And I mean, because that's still, I can change my food all day long, but that is always a work in progress for me, is sitting down and slowing down and breathing and all that.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being on. This is a great conversation.
Aw, thank you.
The tiniest spark leads to the biggest blaze, and I hope that today's episode sparks you on a journey to healing and wholeness. Thanks for listening to Sparking Wholeness. For more information on what I do and my coaching programs, or maybe just to reach out and say hey, find me at sparkingwholeness.com or on Instagram at sparkingwholeness. Have a fabulous week.